Hello, my name is Stephen Schaub. I'm the leader of the Fidgetal Revolution, as well as an artist at Indian Hill Image Works in Pawlet, Vermont. The title of this audio blog is Two Buck Chuck. Good Cheap Film Does Exist. Okay, first off, for those of you that don't know where the nickname Two Buck Chuck came from, Two Buck Chuck is a brand of extreme value wine, bargain price premium wine produced by Charles Shaw. Made primarily from California grapes, these wines, I believe, are exclusively sold at Trader Joe grocery stores. Just to give you an idea, you can buy a bottle of this wine for $1.99. I mean, it's ridiculously cheap wine, and it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. So thus the name Two Buck Chuck. And I got thinking, considering the current recession, and considering the advancements in fidgetal technology, I use the word fidgetal there, fidgetal hybrid technology. Is it possible that you could shoot a good, cheap film and get results with the aid of scanning software and Photoshop that maybe make spending $6, $7, $8 for a roll of film not always necessary? So that's where I'm going with on this audio blog. And I think that it's important for all of you high-end pro film snobs out there, and I'm one of you, to sort of listen to everything that I'm going to say, because I think at the end of this audio blog, you'll understand the applications that I'm sort of trying to emphasize here. Okay, first off, there are advantages to using an inexpensive film. One, you can shoot more film. That's a big advantage. You know, if I'm having to spend $8 a roll or $7 a roll for film, I'm only going to shoot a certain amount of film. If I can get film for $2, I'm going to shoot more film. You know, that should not be overlooked. Two, this inexpensive film is readily available. You know, if you're trying to find a high-end professional film, especially with the fact that so many local mom-and-pop photo stores have gone out of business recently, chances are you're having to mail order everything. So you're having to buy from Calumet or B&H or Adorama or Sammy's, somewhere. You're not going to, most likely, unless you happen to be fortunate to live next to one of these places, be able to quickly go source film in the afternoon. However, most of us have a Rite Aid, a Walgreens, a CVS, a Walmart, a Kmart, or some sort of pharmacy general sort of store where these inexpensive films can easily be had, especially at the pharmacy type stores like the Rite Aids and the Walgreens. They seem to stock a pretty decent supply of 35mm, you know, cheap, inexpensive film. Now, when I was starting this test and sort of starting this look at the idea of using, you know, inexpensive film, I had certain criteria that I was looking at. First off, the film had to be readily available. Secondly, I decided that the film had to be right around $2 or less. So the most expensive film that I tested was $2.15. You know, my favorite film, the film that I'm going to talk about the most in this audio blog, was $1.99. So, you know, inexpensive film, literally two-thirds the cheaper than a professional-grade film. So a real value in terms of film shooting. And I know a lot of people right now are saying, yeah, Steve, but film is the cheapest part about photography. That's right. But why overpay if you don't have to? So keep an open mind here. I, for one, and I'll give you a personal example here, have been many times out photographing somewhere and have shot more film than I thought I was going to. And all of a sudden, I don't have enough film in my bag for the day. So in a pinch, I've gone to a Duane and Reade's, a Rite Aid, a CVS, or a Walgreens, and bought a couple rolls of Fuji or a couple rolls of Gold just to be able to finish out my day shooting. And what's always surprised me, it's always been sort of nagging me in the back of my brain, was, wow, the scans actually looked pretty damn good. As a matter of fact, if I have the stuff posted on my wall, I think you'd be hard-pressed to really, in a lot of cases, to determine which one was the pro and which one was the amateur-based film. And that sort of brings me to the whole reason why I wanted to do this audio. Now, there are certain advantages to lesser quality, cheaper, amateur-based films. One is a latent image deterioration. I mean, a lot of these cheaper films are designed to take a photograph and have it sit in the camera for an extended period of time before processing. Professional films are very much like a Ferrari. You know, we refrigerate them prior to using, we shoot them, and then we process them in pretty quick order. Or we put them back in the refrigerator to keep that latent image as solid and as perfect from its capture state as possible. And I think that, you know, for a documentary photographer who's maybe shooting in far-flung places and might not be able to get their film processed for an extended period of time, this could be of a lot of value. Another thing is that professional-grade film, I like to always use the analogy of a banana. The emulsion is like a perfectly ripened banana. It's not green, it's not brown, it's perfect. And that's why we refrigerate that film, to keep it stabilized at that perfect amount of emulsion, ready to capture color and tonality and everything in front of the lens. Amateur film's not like that. Amateur film is more like a green banana when it first comes out. And it's got a range where the emulsion changes over time, from green to being nice yellow, yellow with little brown specks, to being a brown piece of junk. So there's this range and a longer life that that film has in its usability. And a lot of photographers used to make the claim, and it was a valid one, that that amateur-based film wasn't consistent because of where the emulsion was in its ripening process. However, nowadays with the ability of doing color correcting and subtle color correcting and selective color correcting in Photoshop, a lot of those issues have changed. And a lot of the tolerance concerns, I know a lot of photographers right now are saying, yes, but I need to have exact tolerance from batch to batch to batch to batch of film. I always buy a whole bunch of film in the same emulsion number. You know, none of that stuff is as important now as it was back in the traditional days. You know, now that most people listening to this website are doing a digital or hybrid process, that's sort of become less of an issue because of the power of scanning, because of the power of Photoshop. So amateur films have a lot of advantages. And I said, the biggest one is the fact that it's cheap. It's literally two-thirds less cheaper than shooting most of the pro-grade films of a comparable speed. And that really is something that I think, especially in this economy, is important. It lets you shoot more film. So I decided to test four different films and just see how good they were. The four films I chose were Gold 100, Gold 200, Fuji 200, and Fuji 400 Extra. So four color negative materials. And the only one that I had to order was the Gold 100. I'm not sure if it's still being made. It's not listed on Kodak's website, yet it's readily available at Adorama and B&H. I'm suspicious that it's being made for other markets other than North America, but I can't confirm that. But there is a lot of it out there. So I tested these films with the same level of scrutiny that I would test any professional film. I tortured the hell out of them. And I shot scenes with tremendous contrast and tonality, to very flat scenes, to high contrast scenes, to skin tones. And here are my thoughts. Okay, first off, the Gold 100. It's a nice film. It actually has a fairly liberal over-under exposure latitude. The color palette is a bit reserved, which is fine. It's fine because I can always increase it in Photoshop. The grain, though, to be honest, for a 100-speed film really wasn't as tight as I thought it should be. So that very quickly came off my list. And the fact that I have to order it makes it not really applicable to sort of my current needs. The second film that I tested was Gold 200. Now, I've heard a lot of really good things about Gold 200 on the internet. And so I bought, you know, 10 rolls and shot a whole bunch of it. It's nice film. It has really nice looking grain. The color, once again, is still very much in the middle. I wouldn't call it saturated. I wouldn't call it flat. I'd call it really right there in the middle. It scans very well. It has a very nice dynamic range. It has a very wide latitude, easily, safely, two stops over, two stops under. We're very comfortable with regards to exposure. And I liked the film a lot. So that was a film that I was sort of gravitating towards in the initial testing. The next film that I tested was the Fuji 200. And the Fuji 200 is an interesting film. It's beautiful. The grain is definitely finer or rounder or something than the gold. It's much smoother when you look at it. The gold, though, has a sharpness to it that I didn't see on the Fuji. And the Fuji also, I found that when you over or underexposed it, even by just two stops, I started noticing color shifts in the film that I wasn't noticing in the gold. And that sort of bothered me, like snow was kind of starting to come out magenta and all sorts of crazy things were starting to happen on two stops over or two stops under. So that was a bit of an issue for me. I also noticed on the Fuji 200 that it starts to shoulder off a little easy and the highlights really start to compress, and getting really good separation and very, very, very bright highlights was difficult, especially when comparing it to the Gold 200. The last film that I tested was the Fuji 400 Superior Extra. It's $1.99 a roll, and hands down, it's the best of the four films. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing film. The sample images that you see it, as provided with this audio are all done on that film. That film has a solid two stops over, solid two stops under. So that's fantastic. You've got a 400-speed film that you can shoot at 100 and 1600 and get very consistent, very good results. It is possible to do 3200, but it's not necessarily pretty. It is possible to go down to 50. That's doable. 25, I wouldn't suggest. So I found this to really be sort of the film that I was looking for. It's $2. It's readily available at almost every single Walgreens, Rite Aid, you know, CVS that I've ever been in. It's inexpensive. And I love, love, love the color and contrast of this film. I heard a lot of people on the internet saying that they thought that this film was grainy. I have not found that to be the case. And my suspicion is that they have their sharpening turned up a lot. And as a result, it's accentuating the grain that does exist in the film. But if you look at the sample images provided, they're quite nice. Now, is it the new Portra 400 micro T-grain technology? Of course not. However, there are a lot of people out there who don't like T-grain films because they like the look of a little bit of grain, that little bit of speckle in an image, and this could be a really nice choice for them. I found this film very easy to work with. Let me open up the files here that I shot of that so I can actually look at what I'm talking about. The first image that I want to talk about is the quick portrait that I did of my wife. Now, that was the 400 rated at 200, literally just sitting in our patio window door, natural light, and I think it looks great. The skin tones look amazing. I've heard people saying that, oh, skin tones look ruddy on this film. I don't think that's the film. I think it's the way people are scanning the film, and that's really important. It's a very big variable. The color palette, everything in that image is amazing to me. Look at the detail in her eye and in her glasses. And remember, this is a $2 roll of film. It blew me away. The next image let's look at is the Superior 400 at 200 of the outside of my yard with the barn and the bright snow. That's really an amazing control of contrast. I mean, look at the range from the dark side of the barn to the dark snow. And there's detail everywhere. Nothing's blowing out. And this is at 200. I actually have a shot of this. I did at 100. They looked equally good. So that also kind of really blew me away when I was still going, wow, you know, the color range is great. The sharpness is fantastic. It's got everything that I want. Let's look at another one of those. And this is the outside of that barn. Same shot, but this time shot at an exposure index of 1600. So two stops underexposed. It looks fantastic. Now, if the barn looks too dark to you on your monitor, trust me, it's not. There's detail in all of that dark wood. It's really dark, but there is still detail in there. The snow looks fantastic. There was no color shift or anything at this point. However, when I did the same shot out to 3200, I started seeing a little bit of a shift in color. So 1600 to me is a real solid number for this film. Let's look at another image. I think there's one more. Yes, the inside of my kitchen here. If you look at that shot, all I did was took an incident light meter reading of the inside of the room, and it's beautiful. Look at the range. Just so you know, I did meter this with a spot meter as well, and those bright values outside the window are all falling at zone 14, zone 15, and there's still discernible detail and separation outside. It's quite nice, you know, and with a little bit of work in Photoshop, I could actually probably bring that down and make it much more usable. The grain looks good, and to be honest, the little bit of micro grain that I see in this file, and this is shot at 100, on most papers that people are printing on, that grain is going to be dissolved in the paper. You're not going to see it. Unless you're printing on like a really high resolution Brita sheet, you're not going to see that. Let me take a little sip of drink here just a second. I'm dry. Okay, so, you know, the range is beautiful, the color is beautiful, the sharpness is great. Now, I know the question that you're asking me right now. Steve, but how does this compare to the professional films? And I will say it right now. Portra 400, the new stuff that I just reviewed, has a bigger exposure latitude. It's easily usable down to 25, and a solid and safe 3200. And I posted examples, by the way, or a link to another article that somebody else had written showing that film out at 6400 and 12,000. You know, I still think 3200 in my mind is sort of the outer edge of that film. And the Portra 400 also has, because of the micro T grain, it's extremely fine grain. But now I think we all have to step back for a second and ask ourselves the question. Do you, on an average basis, need a film that allows you to shoot, you know, 400 down to 25 and 400 out to 32 and 6400? Now, I know from my own works, no, I don't. 99.999% of the time that I'm out photographing, I'm very comfortable at 100, 200, 400, 800. Occasionally, rarely, I need 16, but that's almost unheard of for me. So for me, the Portra 400, even though I like it a lot of the pluses in its corner compared to, say, this Fujifilm don't really matter as strongly to me as they might to you. If you're a street photographer who wants to shoot in really low light, you know, this could be, you know, the Portra 400 could be a great choice for you. But if you're an average shooter, this film for $2, the Fuji 400 Extra, is really just a hard film not to like. Matter of fact, it's a hard film not to love. You know, so this gets me sort of coming full circle to where I started. Do you need to buy professional grade films all the time? My answer is no. My answer is absolutely not. And here on this website, you know, I've reviewed a lot of very high-end professional films, from the new T-Max 400 to Ektar to Portra to the 400H by Fuji. Those are all absolutely amazing, amazing, amazing films. However, if you're only making 8x10s, 16x20s, you're printing them yourself, you're scanning it on a flatbed scanner, I can tell you the difference between this film and those film are going to be extremely small, if something that you don't even see at all. And I'm being honest about that. You know, it really isn't a super strong case to spend the extra money on the professional level films. Now, if you're a professional photographer and you're doing portraits and you need absolute consistency and it doesn't matter to you that the film costs $6 or $7 a roll, then fine, continue to shoot it. But just realize that the advantages to that film over this particular film are not as great as they used to be, especially in the digital hybrid environment. Another nice perk to the Fuji 400 Superior Extra is that it's also available in 120. So this film is kind of unique, is that you could shoot it in 35 and you could shoot it in 120. I happen to like this film a lot. I like it so much that I just bought 40 rolls of it, which did not cost me that much money. You know, and this is just, it's just important, I think, that we educate ourselves that the way that we think about professional films and amateur films have changed. And sort of what we need those films to provide us has changed. So in an ideal bag, if I'm going out for the day, I'd probably carry a whole bunch of this film. I'd probably carry one or two rolls of Ektar and a couple of rolls of the Portra 400. That way I've covered all my bases. I can shoot the Fuji for 99.999% of the stuff in front of my lens and be totally happy. Pull out the Ektar for the stuff that I need extreme enlargements for, or pull out the Portra 400 for stuff where I really need to either massively overexpose or massively be able to underexpose the film. Otherwise, the Fuji is absolutely spot on. Now, as I say in every single audio blog, don't believe me, okay? Right now, go out and try this test for yourself. Because I know the moment you go out and buy this film and try this film the way that I'm suggesting it, you're going to go, wow, this really is nice film. Just be careful when you scan it. Do not over-sharpen the film in scanning. First off, it doesn't need it. It's an extremely sharp film to begin with. And if you do over-sharpen it, you are going to accentuate the grain. The film also is not as low of contrast as, say, the 400H or the new Portra film is. So, you know, you really just want to watch your sharpening. But besides for that, this film is spot on. Thank you very much for listening. I can't wait to hear your thoughts and hear your test results. And have a great day.